our Monday Atlanta United recap with 92.9 The Game soccer analyst Jason Longshore on Dukes and Bell.
It is brought to you by Heineken, guys. 0.0, great taste, zero alcohol. It is Dukes and Bell. NFL Blitz on the way in about 15 minutes. Jason Longshore joins us right now, though. And Jason, let's recap before we move forward, and that is U.S. Open Cup. Explain to those listeners who go, wait a minute, what's this about now? I remember CONCACAF, because, again, all of this is still somewhat new to Atlanta United fans and, you know, soccer fans who are jumping on the bandwagon. Tell us about U.S. Open Cup and what it means for our club.
Imagine if you had a mid-season tournament with the NFL, if you could resurrect the Alliance teams and the XFL teams, and everybody plays for a grand prize. That's kind of what you're talking about with the Open Cup. You have all the divisions who can enter, your local team can enter the tournament, and if they win enough games to get to this point, they get a chance to play a Major League Soccer team. It is the oldest trophy in American soccer. It's one of the oldest trophies in the world. And it's a big deal because it gets you into the CONCACAF Champions League. Atlanta United enters in the round of 32, and they go to Charleston to face the Battery, who they've beaten twice at this stage, but they haven't had to play in Charleston in a competitive match yet.
It is our man Jason Longshore talking about U.S. Open Cup. And the question we had for you was what kind of lineup we were going to see. Brad Guzan talked about it as we had so much momentum, winning 6 of 8 in a really compressed schedule. So how many of the starters will we see tomorrow?
It sounds like we're going to see quite a few. The team's headed over to Charleston now, and they will be missing Joseph Martinez, who is with the Venezuelan national team. Tito Villalba getting some rehab work done on his knee in Argentina, and I think changing his hair color as well while he's in Argentina. So he's busy. He's there. Julian Gressel's had some muscle tightness. He's going to be kept out of it. And Ezequiel Barco is returning to Atlanta this week. He's going to return to training on Thursday.
Yay!
So if they make it past this round, right, you could see Barco in the round of 16.
Wow, that's good news. And Barco's been hot as we've watched him overseas as well. So as the importance of this, where does this fall in the importance of what we're trying to get accomplished? You know, for Mike and I, we always talk about, listen, we want to win MLS Cup. That's we did it last year. Mm-hmm. Where does this fall in the importance for the club and Darren Eales? Because he's always telling us, you know, all these things are relevant.
They are. They are all relevant. I think you do have to rank trophies to a degree because there comes times and seasons where you have to prioritize. Now, I know we had a lot of conversation early on the season about prioritizing CONCACAF Champions League over MLS Cup, and that's not the same conversation because they're two different ends of the calendar. But prioritizing Open Cup over regular season, over Supporters Shield, right now you don't really have to worry about it. If you advance into the quarterfinals and you're talking about Open Cup matches going into midweek slots during already crowded schedule, then it can get trickier. But right now you have an opportunity for your starters who have been playing well, but also your guys who have been right there and need some time with a mix of starters to show what they can do. A guy like Andrew Carlton, who's played very well for Atlanta United too in recent weeks, this would be a great opportunity for him to mix in with some of the starters.
All right, before we move on to the U.S. men's national team in our latest debacle, Philadelphia keeps on winning. Right now, though, still we're only 5 points out of first, and we're certainly in the playoffs right now in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, Atlanta United's in a really good spot with matches in hand, but Philadelphia, I think over the last couple of matches, has shown that they're not going away. They showed a lot of character in both of them. They came from behind 3 times to beat Minnesota, and they came back 2-0 down against the Red Bulls and ended up winning 3-2. Elsinho came off the bench and had 2 goals and an assist and was absolutely electric. It's the biggest win, I think, in Philadelphia Union history.
Wow. Jason joins us again, guys, brought to you by Heineken. Each and every week, and we get a chance to talk soccer and Atlanta United. Obviously, we don't get back onto the pitch for a while, but the U.S. Open Cup is next for us. Mike and I were having this conversation. We want to bring you into it, and that's about our U.S. men's team. And you know, we all kind of scratched our heads when we didn't qualify for the World Cup last time around. Where are we in this process of turning things around for the U.S. men's team and how they do things, Jason?
If it's a book, we're still early in the first chapter and shouldn't be. At this stage, you didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and that happened late in 2017. And we are in the middle of 2019, and it feels like we haven't really turned the corner yet. You have the Gold Cup coming up, and I feel like the way that the whole coaching hiring process was handled and settling with Greg Berhalter, who's done well in Major League Soccer but didn't win an MLS Cup, right, took the Columbus Crew to MLS Cup, settling for him, I feel like there's a lot of pressure on this Gold Cup. I feel like you have to reach the final. You don't win it if you lose to Tata Martino's Mexico. Okay, Mexico's a better team right now. But you have to get to the final. I think anything less than that's going to feel like a failure.
And the thing, Jason, you've got one of the great young players in the world, 20-year-old Christian Pulisic, who, by the way, is moving to Chelsea as they finally did the transfer from Germany, and Hazard moves on to Spain. So you got one of the top players in the world coming back. Now, he's got a rest, kind of like what we went through with Pitti, a lot of competition. When are we going to see him, and what's he going to do, and how are they going to use him?
That's the question. I'm really curious to see how they use him. He came into the national team camp right before the Venezuela game, so you didn't need to rush him in and throw him in there. So he's got a full week of training before the tournament kicks off. I think you're probably going to see him out wide. I think that's the best position for him, and it does feel a little bit like it, the conversations with Pitti Martinez, where if you get Pulisic out wide, you take some of the pressure off and some of the bodies away from him and let him do what he does best. He can run at players when you create those 1v1 situations, and that's where he's really dangerous. You want him to focus on that, but he's going to have to bring a different level to this team. Tyler Adams is going to have to bring a different level to this team. He is joining the team this week after a long season in Germany. What concerned me the most was the lack of that American fighting spirit that we've generally seen from the men's national team, because they have been undermanned over the years, but they always had that grit. You didn't see any grit yesterday.
Well, here's the thing, Jason. As we look at this team moving forward, everybody I've read, and I've talked to you about this off the air too, and Carl and I have talked about it, want to be sure we're educated on this. I'll tell you what our perception is. You tell me if I'm off the mark on this. This thing has been run like a country club. This thing has no accountability. You need a fresh set of eyes. I mean, Darren, imagine the Carlos Bocanegra and Darren running this thing with a clean slate and starting from scratch. I don't want to lose those guys, but is that the kind of bold thinking this thing needs to turn it around?
Yeah, I would actually agree with that completely, because it does have a bit of an old boys network feel to U.S. soccer. And as you see Major League Soccer grow, and as you see managers come in from overseas, as you see executives come in from overseas, you're seeing some different influences. And I think at the developmental level, at the academy level, the level of overall talent that's being produced is better than it's ever been. You're still not producing the worldwide superstars yet, but every country has that conversation. You know, Lionel Messi doesn't fall out of a tree. Like, that's kind of a special thing here. You can't just create a blueprint to create Lionel Messi. So you have to create a good pool. I think they're doing that. But at this level right now, it's just not what it should be. You shouldn't be getting dominated by Jamaica and Venezuela in these matches. That should never happen for the U.S.
So is Greg the wrong head guy? I mean, let's break this down, because I'm already seeing things out there about him saying, oh, the problem starts at the top, and, yeah, you know, it's Berhalter, he's the issue, and he's got favoritism, and he's doing this. Did we pick the wrong guy?
We didn't really look at anybody else. That's the one thing about it that is most frustrating. If you settled on Berhalter as your best candidate after a process where people were talked to, okay, I can buy that, because Tata Martino praised Greg Berhalter's teams in Columbus quite a bit. He did well. But what my issue right now is that you're trying to train the national team like you would a club team, and you don't have that ability. You don't have the number of training sessions. Think back to Frank DeBoer talking about implementing his system, right, and it was going to take 6 months, and you needed time. Greg Berhalter doesn't have that time. He's not going to have the number of training sessions that Frank DeBoer has had in these 6 months. Greg Berhalter's not going to have that with the national team over probably a year and a half.
Right.
So having a complex system to implement, you don't have the time to do it at the national team level.
It is Jason Longshore, guys, talking about United and the big picture, U.S. men's national team with Gold Cup action about to kick off. Brought to you by Heineken, 0.00% alcohol, zero great taste, I should say, and zero alcohol. Jason, what about, though, Klinsmann? Did he get a fair shake? And because of the Klinsmann experience, that's why they wouldn't go with Tata? because there's almost like a xenophobia about having foreigners running this thing?
I wonder how much the Klinsmann fallout did affect that process, but I think Jurgen Klinsmann did get a fair shake. I think his first cycle, and it should have been one cycle. I feel like with the national team, it's one cycle. It's one World Cup cycle, and then you bring in somebody new with those new ideas, a fresh look at it. Right. Klinsmann should not have come back after the 2014 World Cup because it was diminishing returns. And when he had the team lose in the Gold Cup semifinals in Atlanta to Jamaica, that should have been the end of the road, and it wasn't. I think Klinsmann got a fair shake. He made a lot of promises, a lot of talk about proactive play. And if you go back and look at the numbers and look at the way the team played in Brazil in 2014, very defensive, sitting back, the lack of an attack threw you all the way back to like the 1990 and 1994 teams.